Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, November 16th. Executive Oil Conference. Permian in spotlight as M&A activity soars. Oil-rich basin dominating as companies seek inventory and scale. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Back-to-back megadeals in the exploration and production sector, totaling more than $110 billion, had observers wondering if there was really more deal-making going on, and if so, if it was mostly happening in the Permian Basin. The answer to both, according to Tim Perry, Vice Chairman, Global Energy Group with RBC Capital Markets, is yes. His company estimates $150 billion in transactions this year, a record, he told his audience, at Hart Energy's Executive Oil Conference Wednesday at the Horseshoe. And yes, more than 63% of those transactions are in the Permian Basin, he said. Quote, part of the reason is the oil strip is in a very good place for merger and acquisition activity, he said. An oil price strip ranging from $65 to $80 is where both buyers and sellers are comfortable, he said. Another reason is the Permian Basin offers the inventory of drilling locations operators want to grow and build their production. He estimated the Permian has 12 times the number of locations as the Denver-Julesburg Basin and 16 times as many as the Eagle Ford. Perry sees similarities between 2023 and 1988-2001 when a run of mergers combined Exxon with Mobil, BP with Arco, Chevron with Texaco, and Conoco with Phillips 66. The difference is that from 1998 to 2001, oil prices were extremely low and companies were consolidating to cut costs and survive. In 2023, he said buyers are on the hunt for inventory because investors want companies they perceive as having asset quality, inventory depth, and trading liquidity. Ryan Duman, Director, U.S. Upstream Research with Wood Mackenzie, estimates that 80% of the Permian Basin's Tier 1 inventory is in the hands of companies with capitalization more than $30 billion. As operators deplete their best Tier 1 inventory, they will begin turning to their Tier 2 and Tier 3 inventory, meaning capital efficiencies could erode as much as 5% to 25% by 2030, he cautioned. Quote, Permian exploration and deeper benches provide pockets of opportunities, but not many locations, he said. Scale has also been a driver in acquisitions because it matters in corporate valuations, Duman said. Quote, no single metric exemplifies adequate scale, but the high water market is increasing, he said. The ExxonMobil Pioneer Natural Resources deal pushed the tight oil scale to new levels, prompting companies with good inventory to consider making deals as the threshold increases. At some point, consolidation will run its course, he said. As more Permian Basin Tier 1 inventory declines and operators turn to Tier 2 inventory, he said they could take steps to improve those returns to Tier 1 levels, including improved efficiency and lower costs. It won't be easy, but isn't impossible, Duman said. Quote, there could also be an effort to grab more non-Permian Basin inventory on the horizon. If the Permian Basin is cost prohibitive, shale assets elsewhere might be the next best option, he said, listing the Austin Chalk, Eagle Ford, Bakken, Powder River Basin, and DJ Basin as possible targets. Even international shales like Canada's Montney and Argentina's Vaca Muerta could see interest. Nodolf won't seek re-election in 2024. District Attorney wants to focus on her family. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolf will not seek re-election in 2024, according to a press release on Wednesday. Nodolf wrote that serving as Midland County's district attorney has been the highlight of her career, but she would like to focus on her family moving forward. She wrote in the news release she has worked 20 years as a prosecutor, including nearly 7 as Midland County's district attorney. Quote, however, after much consideration, reflection, and prayer, I have decided not to seek another term in 2024, Nodolf wrote. Every Midland County District Attorney's Office member knows that one of my core values is that family always comes first, and it is time for me to focus on my family. Since taking office in 2017, I have been committed to seeking justice done with integrity, competence, and compassion. Seeking justice means evaluating every case individually, that the guilty are held accountable by means appropriate for the defendant and the offense, that victims have a voice, and that the innocent are set free. End quote. Nodolf faced a Republican Party primary battle from Glenn Harwood. She also has been through a series of higher-profile cases during her time as Midland County's lead prosecutor, including the arrests of administrators at Midland Christian School and Trinity School of Midland in 2022, and the trial of David Wilson, who was found not guilty of murder in the shooting death of Midland police officer Nathan Heidelberg. Nodolf thanked Midland County and the Midland community for the opportunity to serve in her role for the past 6-plus years. Quote, I am eternally grateful for the dedicated and hardworking men and women in the office who strive every day not focused on convictions, but honesty and justice prevail, Nodolf wrote. With their help, the Midland County District Attorney's Office has continued to streamline the process for case submission to more efficiently and expeditiously review and prosecute cases, collaborated in the creation of specialty courts to address alcohol and drug offenses, increased awareness and programs for individuals with mental health needs, and substantially enhanced victim services. I am proud of our work and what the office stands for. Please know that your trust has never been taken for granted, and I humbly appreciate the opportunity to serve you. End quote. In it for the long haul. Endeavor CEO doesn't see sale of company anytime soon. This story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Senior executives at Endeavor Energy Resources are well aware of the chatter about the company being sold to a major. Names like ExxonMobil and Chevron have been bandied about. A recent estimate put Endeavor's valuation at around $30 billion. Quote, we're in it for the long haul for the Stevens family, which we've always done. Autry loves this company, responded Lance Robertson, chief executive officer of the company, founded by Autry Stevens in 1979. Quote, it is nice to be mentioned, but we're in it for the long run, end quote. That being said, he noted, as he prepared for the company to be honored with a reception hosted by the Midland Wildcat Committee, that Endeavor will shift its focus to make a long-term view. In the third quarter, Endeavor produced 355,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, up an estimated 25% from 2022 levels, even as it reduced its rig count by 3 rigs. Quote, "That's a reflection of how we've increased efficiency. We've also watched our peers do the same. We're all trying to be more capital conscious," Robertson said. Endeavor has placed about 300 wells to sale so far this year. It also reported its 13th consecutive quarter of free cash flow, according to Robertson. Quote, "We've had strong growth. That's been our plan," he said. "Our growth has been several times larger than our peers. Our aim is what's best for Endeavor," end quote. The company will still grow materially, but is transitioning to take a longer-term view as opposed to grow opportunities, using its inventory and resources more responsibly. Endeavor has long been known as a Spraberry producer, but Robertson points out the Spraberry zone runs from the Upper Spraberry down to the Wolfcamp D, and the company, quote, "is actively testing horizons outside the Spraberry trend as we look to add resources," end quote. Moving production, especially the natural gas produced in association with crude oil, is a challenge. Robertson says Endeavor does not turn a well to sales without ensuring there is takeaway capacity for its natural gas, reducing the risk of venting and flaring. The company also has its own center that continuously monitors for emissions and alerts crews so repairs can be made quickly. Quote, "Capturing and selling that product is great for our bottom line," Robertson noted. Water is another issue, and he said Endeavor had a record year for recycling its produced water, recycling more than 50% of its water in its fracturing and completions operations. He said the company also aggressively monitors its injection wells, testing the sites so the company knows the true capacity as it seeks to help reduce seismic events in the area. Quote, "We're having a record year in recycling water and are on track to lower our emissions further, but we know we can always do more and we always try to improve," Robertson said. Small Bites Chicken Salad Chick, opening in Midland, 2024. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. There's more to Chicken Salad Chick than meets the eye. The Southern-style restaurant offers over a dozen made-from-scratch chicken salad flavors, side salads, gourmet soups, signature sandwiches, and desserts. Now, thanks to local entrepreneurs, a Midland location will open in fall 2024. Liz Sevick and Alexis Thompson wanted to bring the community something different and delicious. The mother-daughter duo also will franchise the Odessa and San Angelo locations, both set to open by 2026. Quote, "Along with the one-of-a-kind taste, the brand's mission and story solidified our decision to invest in Chicken Salad Chick. We strive to bring joy and enrich lives personally, so it only made sense to choose this brand and help continue the mission. We are beyond grateful to run this operation as a family business and bring Chicken Salad Chick to the community," Sevick said in a press release sent to the Reporter Telegram. This is the restaurant's first expansion into the West Texas area. Other locations reside in cities such as Austin, Dallas, and Houston, and smaller communities in East Texas. Learn more about Chicken Salad Chick at chickensaladchick.com. Drew Brees' Small Sliders Restaurant coming soon. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Small Sliders, a cheeseburger slider restaurant, is set to come to Midland. Founded by Brandon Landry and backed by Drew Brees, Small Sliders plans to open 5 locations throughout West Texas and the Panhandle, Midland, Odessa, Abilene, Lubbock, and Amarillo. The expansion is a partnership with local operations crew ARJH Encore LP, LLC. The Midland location, or CAN, as the Small Sliders crew calls them, is set to open sometime in late 2024. There are currently more than 20 CANs in development across the state. Like Raising Cane's does with chicken strips, the cheeseburger joint offers a combo featuring 1, 2, 3, or 4 sliders with waffle fries and a drink. Guests can also upgrade to a Biggie Smalls, which features double meat and double cheese. Bacon can be added to any bite, and a chocolate, vanilla, or cookies and cream milkshake make up the dessert finish. The restaurant also offers party packs. Small Sliders opened in 2019 and currently operates 9 CANs in Louisiana and 100 locations in development pipelines across the country. Learn more about Small Sliders at smallsliders.com. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, November 16th. Wilma Wanda Wilkerson Moore, age 90, of Garden City, passed away Sunday, November 12th. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, November 16th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Graveside services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 17th, at Garden City Cemetery. Wanda was born October 1st, 1933, in Big Spring, Texas, to Marion Cecil and Laura Mae Wilkerson. She was raised on the family ranch in Glasscock County, Texas, and graduated from Garden City High School in 1951. Wanda attended Texas Tech University in Lubbock, then moved to Midland. There she met her husband of 68 years, Floyd Bennett Moore. Bennett and Wanda were married in 1955. Wanda was preceded in death by her parents, Cecil and Mae Wilkerson, her brother Marion Wilkerson, her brother and sister-in-law, Milton and Peggy Carver, and nephew, Jim Carver. Wanda will always be lovingly remembered by her husband, Bennett Moore, her daughter, Laura Havlick, and husband Fred of Garden City, her son, Alan Moore, and wife Jacinda of Granbury, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made in memory of Wanda Moore to the Sterling County Nursing Home. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Big Spring. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Delilah Ray Aravalo, age 38, of Midland, passed away Monday, November 13th. Viewing will be Thursday, November 16th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to begin at 7 p.m. Thursday evening at Loella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel, 2508 North Big Spring Street. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, November 17th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. A graveside service will follow at 2 p.m. at Tamarisk Cemetery in Grand Falls, Texas. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Tim Nesbitt, age 80, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, November 14th, surrounded by his family. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, November 17th, at Nally Pickle and West Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 18th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. The interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Ronnie Harris of Midland died on November 10th in Midland. Memorial service will be held on November 20th at 2 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Melinda Hardwick of Midland passed away Sunday, October 29th, in Midland. She was born on November 26, 1946, in Abilene, to James Cowan and Juanita Louise Lou Davis. She grew up in Wichita Falls and studied ballet under the Russian dancers Frank and Irina Paul. She graduated from Midland Lee High School in 1964 and married Clifford James Hardwick of Midland on June 9, 1966. The couple moved to Austin while Cliff attended law school, and it was there that she became a lifelong Longhorns fan. They returned home to Midland, where they raised their three children. Melinda worked as a certified legal assistant for more than 30 years at Stubblemann, McRae, Seeley, Laughlin, and Browder. She retired from the firm in 2014 and was their longest-serving non-lawyer. She is preceded in death by her parents and stepfather, Jack Swofford, and her parents-in-law, Jim and Sarah Hardwick. She is survived by her husband Cliff, their children Sean Hardwick Jones, Heather Potts, and Mark Hardwick, and her granddaughter Megan Party. Also her sons-in-law Alan Jones and Brad Potts, step-granddaughters Lauren Potts and Megan Potts, and grandson-in-law George Party. In addition, she is survived by her brothers and sisters-in-law, whom she thought of as siblings, and many nieces, nephews, grandnieces, and grandnephews. Her family will host a reception honoring Melinda's life from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturday, November 18th, at Aldridge Gardens. In lieu of flowers, Melinda's family would appreciate donations to Midland Habitat for Humanity or Midland Meals on Wheels. These two organizations were very dear to her heart.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, November 16th. Council blames former staffers for parks issues. Odessa City Council members spent considerable time discussing what they perceive to be the failings of past park and city administrators during its regular city council meeting Tuesday night. First, the council was informed by new Parks and Recreation Director Max Reyes the city never had a $1.9 million project at Slater Park inspected after it was completed in November 2016. Reyes said arrangements have been made for the inspection to take place Tuesday. Failure to come into compliance with the Texas Department of Licensing and regulation could cost the city as much as $5,000 a day, he said. Secondly, Reyes told council members that the Floyd Gwynn Park project still isn't complete. Since he took over his role from former Parks Director Steve Patton, Reyes said he has discovered major irrigation issues, a holy pavilion roof, improperly crimped trim, and faulty weather stripping. In addition, Reyes also discovered that instead of removing an asphalt parking lot, a contractor simply dumped dirt over it, claiming that's what a prior administrator instructed them to do. The lights at the park are currently locked down because a subcontractor is waiting to be paid by the main contractor, Onyx, Reyes said. Council member Denise Swanner noted the $6 million project has a $1.3 million in change orders. On top of that, the council recently learned an $80,000 public art project can't be installed until the city pays for its foundation. The artist told the city he and Patton had a verbal agreement the city would pay for the foundation. Reyes said Tuesday night, the artist also wants the city to install $80,000 worth of surface-mounted lights for his piece. The council voted at its last meeting to cancel its contract with the artist, although the city has already paid him $40,000. The council indicated to staff they want them to explore filing an insurance claim to resolve the construction project situation. City Manager John Beckmeyer called the entire Floyd Gwynn situation a boondoggle from the get-go. Mayor Javier Hoven said the situation was the result of the old culture. Mismanagement has been seen again and again with Sherwood Park, the park at UTPB, McKinney Park, and now Floyd Gwynn, he claimed. It's just been a farce of what's been going on here within the previous administration in the parks and many others, and this is why it's imperative we make these changes, Hoven said. I keep saying this, that culture is in the past, it's behind us. This is not the culture that exists, and everybody that's in the city is fixing it. We're identifying it. It's not a time to sit there and just throw up our hands. We're going to deal with the situation. We are going to fix it. We're going to hold companies we hire responsible, and we're not going to burden taxpayers. The council also voted 5-0 Tuesday to discontinue a program that sets aside 1% of capital improvement projects over $250,000 for public art. Council members Steve Thompson and Gilbert Vasquez abstained from the vote, but their colleagues said the city simply can't afford the program when it needs to address other things such as water and roads. The council also heard a presentation from the city's new strategic planning policy manager, Jeff Fisher, who has been researching other cities' policies on carports. Right now, carports are not allowed in front of houses in Odessa, and if they are detached, they're not allowed on the side either. After hearing Fisher's report, the council seemed to agree they are interested in changing the city's ordinance to allow for detached carports under some circumstances, as long as they match the facade of the home and can't be used as storage. Fisher is expected to come back to the council with a proposed ordinance soon. The council also heard Deputy City Manager Agapito Bernal, who hired Leah Albertson as interim court administrator, and two other new supervisors. Albertson is a certified court clerk with the National Center for State Courts and a trainer for the Texas Municipal Court Education Center and the National Center for State Courts. All three women were hired after Municipal Court Administrator Kimberly Jaswiak and some other court leaders resigned in recent weeks. Albertson said she had a list of 30 things they're working on, including building metrics and improving processes. Bernal said he is also working on getting a current staff member qualified to become a bailiff, a position that has been empty for a couple of years. In addition, the council heard from Odessa Park Police Chief Mike Gerke, who would like to have the savings from 48 open police officer positions and provide raises to his current officers and make the department more competitive. He provided the council with four proposals, but the one he preferred would still leave almost $1.1 million in excess funds and allow him to hire four civilian community service officers and eight police officers and give a financial incentive for officers who work at night. The proposal also eliminates compression issues and the corporal position within the department. Corporals, Gerke said, don't have different duties than officers. Beckmeyer supported Gerke's proposal and said he's okay with coming to the council in 6 months or a year for more officers because by then OPD will be able to fill the positions thanks to the raise in pay. Patty Craven, the chief executive officer of the Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest, also spoke with the council about the possibility of the city donating the building at 5217 North Dixie to the Girl Scouts. They've been leasing the building since 1986 and would like to update it, but in order to obtain grant funding, they would need to own the building, Craven said. More than 250 girls from 13 troops use their building regularly, she said. City staff was instructed to do a little exam on the building, a title exam on the building. Hoven also asked the council to consider creating a committee of faith-based organizations to help guide what policies we can and cannot come with, what we should consider to start addressing some of our issues that are not going to go away and they're going to multiply. Homelessness is one major issue brought up. Too often there aren't enough people to man warming stations that open up on especially cold nights, he said. Texas legislators approve bill allowing police to arrest people who cross the border illegally. The Texas House of Representatives approved immigration bills Tuesday that would appropriate more than $1.5 billion for additional border barriers and make illegally crossing the Texas-Mexico border a state crime. Senate Bill 3 would allocate $1.54 billion for border barriers and to pay for state troopers to patrol Colony Ridge, a housing development near Houston that far-right publications claim is a magnet for undocumented immigrants. During Tuesday's debate in the House, lawmakers adopted an amendment to SB 3, introduced by State Representative Tracy King, Democrat, Uvalde, that would allow some of the money to be used to help local police and governments enforce the new state crime proposed in Senate Bill 4. SB 4 would make it a state misdemeanor to illegally cross the border from Mexico into Texas, empower Texas peace officers to arrest undocumented immigrants, and require that a state judge order the person to leave the U.S. to Mexico in lieu of prosecution. If we're going to make them do this, then we need to help them pay for it, King said. SB 3, which passed on an 84-59 vote, goes back to the Senate, which previously approved the bill so it can vote on the amended version. SB 4 passed on an 83-61 vote. The Senate already passed the bill last week, so it now heads to the governor's desk. Under SB 4, the charge would be enhanced to a felony if the migrant is accused of other crimes or refuses to comply with a judge's order to return to Mexico. The bill also allows immigrants to present any evidence that they are in the country legally during the prosecution. The maximum penalty for a misdemeanor charge is a year in jail. For a felony, the penalty is 2 to 20 years in prison. Democrats introduced dozens of amendments to the bill, including language that would exclude immigrant children from prosecution, along with victims of trafficking and sexual assault. Other amendments said that if Mexico doesn't accept a person from a particular country, the immigrant could use that as a defense from prosecution. None of the amendments were adopted. Representative David Spiller, Republican, Jacksboro, sponsor of SB 4, urged lawmakers to vote against the amendments because his goal was to get the bill passed and get it passed cleanly and get it to the governor's desk as soon as possible. Republicans adopted a motion to end the debate after 8 hours on Tuesday over objections from Democrats. State Republican Victoria Neve, Criado, Democrat Dallas, asked why Republicans silenced Democrats during debate on a bill that could affect Texans statewide. Why are we elected if you don't even have the cojones to defend this piece of legislation, Criado said in Spanglish. Republican lawmakers are attempting to pass the proposals in a fourth special session of the year after they failed to approve similar bills in previous special sessions. During the debate on SB 3, Democrats raised concerns about the amount of money being spent on the border when the state could be funding things such as hospitals, health care access, or updating state prison infrastructures. State Representative John Bryant, Democrat Dallas, said that the money proposed for border barriers and Colony Ridge, the state could build 15 hospitals at $100 million each in rural parts of Texas. I could go down a list of things that money could be spent on. We're $2 billion currently short of the money we need just to pay for the current level of special education being borne by our independent school districts, Bryant said. This is a huge amount of money. We shouldn't spend it unless we know that there is data that indicates it will impede illegal entries into Texas. State Representative Chris Turner, Democrat, Grand Prairie, asked the bill's sponsor, Representative J.C. Jetton, Republican, Richmond, why the proposal sets aside $40 million for more law enforcement presence in Colony Ridge, a rural development in Liberty County. Can you state what that concern is that merits this appropriation, Turner said. Jetton declined. I'm not going to try to debate or litigate whether or not Colony Ridge is safe or unsafe, Jetton said. As the House debated SB 4, Spiller said the proposal is meant to target immigrants who recently crossed the Rio Grande into Texas rather than people who have been in the state a long time. He said because misdemeanors have a 2-year statute of limitations, undocumented immigrants who crossed the border more than 2 years ago wouldn't be affected if the bill passes. When the representation of the general public is, the Texas House is about to pass something that's going to round up somebody's grandmother that's been here all of their life. That is completely false, Spiller said. State Representative Joe Moody, Democrat, El Paso, introduced 2 amendments to the bill that would require police and prosecutors to find out if an immigrant arrested under the new law is in the country legally before the case is prosecuted. Both failed. I would suggest to you that the individual who has followed the rules, who has been arrested, who has been jailed, they would say 1 minute of their liberty has been taken when they have followed the rules is too much, Moody said. In a landmark 2012 case, Arizona versus U.S., the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that local police didn't have the authority to arrest somebody solely based on their immigration status, and that responsibility falls to the federal government. That case stemmed from a 2010 Arizona law known as SB 1070, which made it a state crime for illegal immigrants not to carry their immigration papers and required police officers to investigate the immigration status of any person they come into contact with. Democrats said during Tuesday's debate that regardless of how Republicans attempt to make SB 4 constitutional, the Supreme Court has ruled that states cannot enforce immigration laws on their own. We all know why we're here, Neave Criado said. SB 4 intends to challenge the decades-long holding of Arizona versus United States, given the new makeup of the United States Supreme Court, which we have already seen overturn the 50-year-long precedent of Roe versus Wade. Spiller denied that's his intent. People have asked me that. Are you trying to overturn Arizona versus U.S.? And my answer is no, Spiller said. Trustees approve Nacero extension. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees held a public hearing Tuesday on an amendment to the previously approved agreement for a limitation on appraised value with Nacero, Texas 1 LLC, Texas Comptroller Application 1568. Nacero is seeking an extension of the timeline and to list a reduced number of qualifying jobs on the application to align with the legal minimum per guidelines from the state comptroller. Following the public hearing, trustees voted 4-0 to approve reduced number of qualifying jobs on the application to align with the legal minimum and vote 4-0 to approve an extension for the project Tuesday. Board members Delma Abalos, Steve Brown, and Bob Thayer were absent. In his opening comments, Superintendent Scott Murray walked through a few results from last year's SAT school day scores showing improvements for ECISD students. English reading writing increased from 476 to 479, which is 7 points higher than the state score, 472. Math increased from 447 to 458, which is 6 points higher than the state score, 452. And the mean score rose from 923 to 936, which is 12 points higher than the state score, 924. The board also received an update on bond 2023. On November 7th, voters approved Proposition A by 57% to 43% margin. For school projects totaling more than $424 million. Murray noted that this is the largest school bond in ECISD's history and comes 11 years after the last successful bond, $129.75 million. The board recap said he thanked the bond committee that worked for 5 months to create the proposal. He thanked the action committee that campaigned on behalf of the propositions. He thanked employees for taking the role of spokesperson for it. And he thanked the community for taking the time to cast a vote and support the district in this manner. He said the timeline will be for 5 years, and work is starting now on prioritized projects. Work out a schedule for buying bonds and finalize contracts for property. South Trip for the new middle school and East Murphy for the new CTE Center. He talked about forming a bond oversight committee by December 5th. Each trustee will nominate a list of community members to serve in this role. Then board members will vote to select 10 people to make up that oversight committee for the next 5 years as the bond projects are begun and completed. In addition, a web page will be set up to allow all of our community to keep track of the progress of the work. On another item, trustees voted 4-0 to approve the annual financial report. Every school district is required to prepare annual financial statements, have them audited by an external public accounting firm, and submit them to the state. The auditor, Whitley Penn, issued an unmodified opinion, meaning a clean report with no internal control findings related to the financial report and no findings related to compliance. The financial report shows the largest area of school district expenditures by function is the general fund for instruction, 59%, and plant maintenance and operations, 10%. This report follows last month's announcement of a perfect score of 100 on the state's first report for financial integrity. Trustees voted 4-0 to approve a resolution allowing the district to use money from the general fund to make payments on bond projects, then reimburse the district's general fund once bonds are sold and funds are received. This will allow the district to begin work on voter-approved bond projects sooner without having to wait until bonds are sold. In other business, trustees voted 4-0 to approve Ector County Appraisal District board members. ECISD is responsible for appointing 5 people to the ECAD board. The five approved by trustees this year are Mary Willis, Dr. Dorothy Jackson, Robert Chavez, Austin Keith, and Felix Avalos. Trustees voted 4-0 to approve submission of a grant to the Office of the Governor for ALERT, training for ECISD peace officers. This grant will help pay overtime and travel expenses related to the required ALERT training. ALERT stands for Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Response Training. All police officers must receive a minimal of level 1 of this training. Trustees voted 4-0 to approve a resolution designating November 20th, 21st, and 22nd, as well as December 20th, 21st, 22nd, 27th, 28th, and 29th as non-business days under the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA. This is a change in the law that went into effect after the legislative session ended. Except for specified national and state holidays and other identified days, government entities now must designate up to 10 days as non-business days for calculating deadlines for TPIA requests. These are days that entity expects to be closed or operating with reduced staff. This must be done for each calendar year. Trustees vote 4-0 to approve the consent agenda. The consent agenda is a group of routine or previously discussed items presented together for a single approval vote. This month's consent agenda included minutes of meetings, bills of payment, the quarterly investment report, out-of-state travel for Odessa High School performing arts students to go to New York City, renewal of the Special Education Legal Services Retainer Agreement, and the Medical Director Services Agreement with Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Odessan killed in three-vehicle wreck. A 64-year-old Odessa man was killed in a three-vehicle crash on Tuesday morning on Loop 338 and Hammett Drive. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Delfino Acosta Contreras was traveling west on Hammett Drive in a Chevrolet Silverado when he disregarded the stop sign at East Loop 338 and collided with a tractor trailer that was traveling north on the loop. He then crossed over the southbound lanes and was struck by a second tractor trailer that was traveling south on the loop. Acosta Contreras was pronounced dead at the scene of the crash, which happened shortly after 6 a.m. The crash remains under investigation. Pfluger to hold Odessa Town Hall. U.S. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, will hold a town hall in Odessa at noon November 20th at Odessa College in the Zant Community Room on the second floor of the Salisbury Campus Center, 201 West University Boulevard. The town hall is open to the public. Annual Turkey Trot coming up. Odessa College will host its third annual Turkey Trot Community Walk at the Odessa College Sports Center from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. November 18th. The holidays are coming quickly, and being active is a great way to keep off those holiday pounds that we can put on as we enjoy the holiday treats. The Turkey Trot is free and open to the public, and all ages are welcome. The first 100 people to donate food or toiletries to the Wrangler Food Pantry will receive a free Turkey Trot t-shirt. Items needed are hygienic items, canned beans and tuna. All donations will be accepted. Please no expired items. Enter to win a $500 HEB gift card from the 2023 30 for 30 fitness challenge that you can complete at least 30 minutes of physical activity at the event. Walk, run, or roll your way to that 30 minutes. Plus, on-site fitness classes and tabletop arm bikes will be available. Complete the Turkey Trot Punch Car Challenge and you will win an Instant Omni Plus air fryer toaster oven. Bring the family We'll also have kids' games, activities, and more. Parking will be available at the OC Sports Center at 201 West University Boulevard. For more information, call the OC Sports Center at 432-335-6348 or email sportscenter@odessa.edu. The Hills Are Alive, MCT presents The Sound of Music. Beginning this week, Midland Community Theater brings a classic Rodgers and Hammerstein musical to the stage for its final production of the 2023 season. The Sound of Music, one of the world's most beloved musicals, will take the stage at the Davis Theater at the MCT, starting with its performance this Friday and continuing through December 16th. Directing the musical for the third time is MCT Executive Director Jim Jebson. "It's one of my favorites," Jebson said. "I think most people are introduced to it through the Julie Andrews movie, so it has a family tradition to it. When we're looking for holiday shows that aren't necessarily a Christmas classic, we're looking for something that the family enjoys. I don't know about you, but I tend to watch this at the holiday season. Even if the story doesn't have anything to do with Christmas, it still has that holiday feel to it." Tickets can be purchased online at tinyurl.com/mrxvuu24. The performance features a trove of cherished songs, including 16 Going on 17, Climb Every Mountain, My Favorite Things, and Do Re Mi, just to name a few. The musical, which is based on the memoir by Maria Augusta Trapp, follows a postulante who serves as governess to the seven children of the imperious Captain Von Trapp, bringing music and joy to the household. OPD investigating Boot Barn theft. The Odessa Police Department is investigating a theft that occurred at approximately 5:21 p.m. November 14th at the Boot Barn located at 5125 East 42nd Street. Investigation revealed that an unknown male stole approximately $1,076 worth of merchandise and left the scene in a black four-door Nissan sedan. Anyone who recognizes the suspect shown in the surveillance footage is encouraged to contact Detective N. Troglin at 432-284-2012 or Crime Stoppers at 432-333-TIPS and reference case number 23-00-13521. One of the oldest McDonald's in Odessa reopens its doors after months of renovation. The McDonald's, located at 5141 East 42nd Street in Odessa, has reopened its doors after several months of work to demolish and completely rebuild the restaurant. The restaurant brings a fresh new look with contemporary decor, modern facilities, expanded order points, and amazing curbside appeal, a press release said. McDonald's leadership heard the demands of its guests by providing a great place to dine in while striving to meet and exceed the expectations of carryout, drive-through, curbside, and McDelivery customers. The drive-through is now a double-digit drive-through with easier traffic flow. The restaurant's brand new equipment and technology improves speed of service and accuracy. Lastly, easier access to drive-through and curbside courier pickup areas help guests who are in a hurry get in, pick up their food, and get back on the road.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.